Welcome to all the guests. I don't think I said that during announcements. Welcome to anybody who's visiting us for the first time, joining us. I know we have a couple out there. Welcome to anybody tuning in online. We're happy to have you. We'll be happier when we're all back together in here, when there is no threat of any virus. That's what we all look forward to, is getting back to normal. A couple weeks ago, Mr. Turgeon gave, I keep saying back to normal, I know Mr. Turgeon made a really good point. We don't want to get back to normal. We want to excel. We want to exceed past that. But to the extent that we're all here together, that's normal. Having potlucks, smelling the food, that's normal. We're not quite there yet, but we're I think, steadily approaching that mark. I appreciate the message we heard this morning. I think it's going to fit really well with what I have. I want to start here with a story, give you a little bit of a background of what happened. On February 12th of 1993, there was a party up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. If you've ever been to any types of parties growing up, sometimes they get a little out of hand. You know, you've got different cliques, different groups of people, different age groups at times. And not everybody gets along. Not everybody's friendly at these. And sometimes that creates some degree of tension, especially if there's different gangs or different cliques involved with that. And at this specific party back in 93, there was so much tension that was building up that it actually hit a tipping point. There was a tipping point when a 16-year-old named O'Shea Israel got into a heated argument with a 20-year-old, Loramian Bird. So these two end up going at it. You know, they got into this heated altercation. This heated altercation that went beyond just fighting, went beyond just words. Israel at one point thought that Bird was reaching for a gun. So Israel reached in, pulled out his gun, and fired three shots into Bird. He fired a fourth one, hitting him in the head and killing Bird. So what started out is supposed to be fun. Parties are supposed to be lively. They're supposed to be entertaining. Time to spend with each other. It escalated into this. Another brutal murder. Brutal murder, a senseless act of urban violence. Unnecessary violence that left Mary Johnson without her only son. As any mother, as any parent, she struggled with this. She struggled with this thought, how to cope with this loss. How to continue living, how to continue with her life. She was consumed by shock. She was consumed by anger, and rightfully so. I think I'd be right there with her. I don't know how I could get past that. I commend any parent who has ever gone through anything like that, because I don't know how you move past that. But she struggled. She struggled with this point. And she was so angry that at one point, there was actually an altercation at the courthouse. You know, because they were there for the trial and different things, she actually had to be restrained in the courtroom. They were afraid that there was an interaction between her and Israel's mother, that it was going to become violent, that she was going to end up striking O'Shea Israel's mother. And so they stepped in. They stepped in, and she had to be restrained at that point. All this anger, all this fuel, this rage that she had. And she tried to forgive him. They've talked to her, and she tried. She tried from the bottom of her heart to actually forgive and to move on, but she couldn't. She was consumed with heartbreak, and she was consumed with hatred. Because she no longer had a son. She no longer had a son. Mary viewed Israel as an animal. She no longer looked at him as a human being. She thought he should be caged for the rest of his life. And through the sentence, that's basically what happened. It wasn't for the rest of his life, but he was convicted of second-degree murder, and he was sentenced to 25 years in prison. So her thought of him being locked away, this animal that doesn't deserve to be with the rest of the population, that doesn't need to live a normal life, she found some justice in that. She found some sense of justice, but she couldn't shake that feeling of hatred. She couldn't shake what was deep down inside of her, that gut feeling that she just couldn't get past it. That anger that she stored, that she harbored, and she didn't want to. It's not like she was there purposely doing it. She got justice from our court system. He was punished for his crimes. And she received that physical justice. But she was torn apart internally. She was torn apart. And she just couldn't forgive. And without forgiveness, she stayed there. And that anger and that hatred harbors. When we think about us, you know, we just came out of the spring holy days and we just got through past Pentecost. But if we go back even farther past Pentecost to the spring again, it was evident without a doubt, without any question, we are murderers. We went through that time period talking about the sacrifice that Jesus Christ made. And it boils down that every single one of us, we are responsible for the death of another human being. We didn't pull out a gun, but it's through our actions. Our actions have caused the death of our elder brother. We hit that really hard back in the spring holy days. We're the offenders. We're the ones responsible, each of us, because of our sins, are responsible for the death of Jesus Christ. So we understand a little bit of what it is to be a murderer. To take a life. On our part, it was somebody gave a life, but we took it because of our actions. We made it really clear. You don't have to go over there, but Peter wasn't only talking to that physical audience. We went through this multiple times throughout the spring holy days. Back in Acts chapter 2, verse 36, when Peter said, "Therefore let the house of Israel know assuredly that God has made this Jesus, whom you crucified, both Lord and Christ." He was very clear when he said "you." It wasn't just that physical audience. It was every single one of us. Every single human being that has lived in the past and that will ever live in the future. We are the you. And we're the ones responsible for the death of Jesus Christ. Fortunately for us, we have a merciful, we have a loving Father who has forgiven us. Who has given us a path for reconciliation. Who has given us a path for forgiveness. Through baptism, he says he doesn't even remember what we do against him prior to that point. And then after that, we do still mess up. We're not perfect because we become baptized. But we work towards perfection. We work towards doing better. But we can be reconciled to our Father. So today, I want to focus on the responsibility that we have. You know, we see a world in chaos. We see a world full of anger, hurt, resentment, fear. We see all these things. And it's not just out there. We see it here. Sometimes we get our feelings hurt when the potluck's not set up the way we want. Sometimes we get our feelings hurt when somebody's sitting in the seat we've sat in for the last 10 years. You laugh, but you know it's true. We've all seen it. We've seen these little things. Those are just the little things. But we have serious problems too that have sometimes separate us. Things that have torn us apart. So it's not that the world's out there and we're in here. We are part of that world and it has infiltrated what God says he wants. So I think it's important for us to look at this, this forgiveness and this reconciliation that we're supposed to extend to others. It's a responsibility that we have. It's part of building that character of God, understanding what it is to be God-like. We have opportunities to not only be forgiven, but forgive. It's probably more important that we learn to forgive, because I think that's the harder one. It's harder for us to actually forgive others than it is to seek for forgiveness. It's easy to go and plead and say, I'm sorry I did that to you. But when things are reversed and we're the hurt ones, it's hard for us to let that go. It's difficult as humans. But it's important that we look at both of these aspects, forgiveness and reconciliation. We need to clarify that these two things are different. One's an expectation, one is a must that we have to have, and the other one is a time period type thing. You know, God wants us to reconcile, but sometimes it takes time. And there's some situations that reconciliation can't happen. But for forgiveness, forgiveness has to take place. Forgiveness is a must. We're going to take a look at a couple of places that reinforce this, that show us that this is a necessity. It is necessary for us to take the step. So if you go over to Matthew chapter 6, this is where we'll start today. We'll read about how it's our responsibility to actually forgive. So if you go over to Matthew chapter 6, we'll look at verses 14 and 15. So this is just after Jesus Christ gives the model prayer. He outlines how we're supposed to come before God in prayer. You know, we know this isn't a repetitious thing, but he's given us a framework. These are the main points that we need to hit on, and that there's variations to that. But inside that prayer, this section at the bottom goes along with where Christ says, "And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors." That's part of that model prayer. And then we get to the bottom. Matthew 6, verses 14 and 15. It says, "For if you forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you do not forgive men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses." That's pretty straightforward. That there's an expectation that we forgive others. If they seek forgiveness, there's an expectation that God says, "Hey, I have forgiven you. I've forgiven you for much greater things than what you're about to forgive this person. I expect that to take place." And then if you go over, look at Mark chapter 11. We find almost verbatim the same exact thing. Mark chapter 11, verse 25. Jesus is stating this again as to what we just read in Matthew. Mark chapter 11, verse 25, it says, "And whenever you stand praying, if you have anything against anyone, forgive him, that your Father in heaven may also forgive you your trespasses. But if you do not forgive, neither will your Father in heaven forgive your trespasses." We see that same framework, this expectation that's placed on us. This expectation that we are required to have forgiveness. We're required to show forgiveness. God expects us to forgive others in order for Him to forgive us. They walk hand in hand. We understand this great sacrifice that Jesus Christ made, as well as God the Father. Jesus Christ was willingly giving His own life for us. And God gave His Son. So they both lost something. They both made a sacrifice. So we could have forgiveness. They expect us to extend the same thing to others, to share in that. We see an example over in Matthew 18. Christ gives a parable that nails this dead on. Matthew chapter 18. This comes after instructions are given about how to treat another believer who has sinned against you. We've all dealt with this, but in Matthew 18, we read this parable that hits home. It strikes a chord exactly what we're dealing with and what the expectations are on us. And it helps us to understand these steps of reconciliation, how we're not supposed to act. So if you look at verse 21 of Matthew 18, it says, "Then Peter came to him and said, 'Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times?'" A little side note. This "up to seven times," he's feeling pretty good about himself right now, I imagine. So if we look at this, the Pharisees usually said, "All right, forgive up to three times. You're doing pretty good if you can forgive somebody up to three times." So Peter doubles that. He's like, "Hey, should we forgive people seven times? This is going above and beyond what they're doing." So I'm sure he's thinking, "I'm doing pretty good here. I'm blowing the Pharisees out of the water. Christ is going to be happy that I'm willing to forgive seven times." And this is what we find. It says, "Jesus said to him, 'I do not say up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had began to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. As he was not able to pay, his master commanded that he be sold, his wife and his children and all that he had, that payment be made. The servant therefore fell before him, saying, 'Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you everything. I will pay you all.' Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, released him, and forgave the debt." So he's doing pretty good. This huge debt that he had, he asked for the forgiveness, and the king was merciful. He showed his servant mercy. So we have another situation. This servant goes on, and we find what the servant does. But that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And he laid hands on him. And he took him by the throat. Can you imagine getting frustrated? Somebody owes you something, you grab him, you throw him up against the wall. He grabs him by the throat, saying, "Pay me what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, "Have patience with me and I will pay you all." This should have resonated with that servant. He just did this same exact thing. And he would not, but he went and threw him into prison till he should pay the debt. So when his fellow servants saw what he had done, they were very grieved and came and told their master all that he had done. Then his master, after he had called him, said to him, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you begged me. Should you not also have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you?" And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due him. So because there was a lack of forgiveness, now I'll read the last one. "So my heavenly Father also will do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brothers his trespasses." So we see this servant was incapable of extending the mercy that he had just received. Instead, he went out and he got angry. He grabbed another servant. We see this huge spiritual aspect of what the new covenant is. And right there at the end, it talks about in our heart. So much of what God's doing and working with us is inside of us, changing our heart, changing our minds. It talks about taking out a heart of stone and giving us a heart of flesh. This falls right in line with that because it has to come from our core. This forgiveness has to come from our core. Because every single human across the board has the potential to be forgiven by God. They can be forgiven because of Christ's sacrifice. And therefore, we are supposed to work in that same fashion. We're supposed to extend that mercy. Forgiveness. Forgiveness must be limitless. It must be unlimited. It has to be, because that was the extent of the debt that was paid. The life of Jesus Christ, that's the unimaginable size of the debt. It doesn't get any bigger than that, than to lay down your life. For us, that's the extent. If we lay down our life for somebody, that's the end of our life. There's nothing more. We know there's a spiritual component that God's working us through, but as physical humans, that's it. That's why this debt is so big. We don't ever want to find ourselves outside of God's law of love. God's law of mercy, of what we show. We need to be diligent to forgive others, no matter the size of the offense. No matter how big we think it is, or the impact that it has on our lives, or how debilitating it is to us. We have to work through this process. We have to find a way. Because Christ's sacrifice was so big. I looked it up. So the two amounts of measurement, we have 10,000 talents. That 10,000 talents is the amount of the debt of that first servant. And it roughly equates to about $4 billion in currency today. $4 billion. It was actually a little bit higher than that. I think it was closer to 4.5, but I was being cautious. $4 billion. So we understand this magnitude of what this is, right? This first servant. It's a fortune. None of us will ever see any amount of money like that in our lifetimes. We, probably all of us in this room together, if we put everything we ever made in our lifetimes, wouldn't see that amount of money. But then we get to that second one. That second servant, 100 denarii. Alright, so we have 4 billion. What's this, the currency of this next one? Approximately 40 bucks. 40 bucks. And a servant was willing to grab him by the throat and try to get this money after he had just been shown so much compassion. So much mercy. There's no comparison. That's how we view Christ's sacrifice. There's no comparison to Christ's sacrifice of what he's doing in our lives and what he's done for us. I mentioned earlier that, you know, sometimes we need to learn to show forgiveness more than the forgiven part. It's because it's harder. It's harder for us to move through that. Or at least most of us. I know it definitely is for me. Our natural instinct when we're hurt, when somebody offends us or does something, it's self-protection. We recoil. It's a defense mechanism. Sometimes we retaliate, we lash back. Some are vengeful. We plan it out, strategize, because we want to get even. But we have all of these human natures. We don't gush with mercy. We don't gush with love and grace and forgiveness. We have to work at that. We have to work at that when we're wronged. I know I don't. I don't have those feelings. Somebody cuts me off. It's, all right, how do I get them back for that? And then it takes me a minute to settle back in. All right, nope, that's not how I act. That's not the way I act. At least I'm not supposed to. Make me feel better. At least you think you do. That's not my normal inclination. Because it hurts when we're wronged. It hurts. So we need God. We need that change. How is it possible? You know, we fight our carnality day in and day out. So how is it possible to obey this command that Jesus Christ gave? He says you're expected to forgive. You're expected to show this. Now, even the apostles were stunned. Now, we go back to Peter again, thinking he's given double the amount. They didn't quite understand this either. As many times, it didn't click with them when Christ was with them. It was later on that they finally caught on. But we're expected to forgive our brothers and our sisters again and again. And we work through these processes. If you turn over to Luke chapter 17 with me. Luke chapter 17, at the very beginning of the chapter, Jesus is teaching about forgiveness. And we see their recognition that, you know, this isn't something that they can do by themselves. They can't do this alone. That there's something greater than just humanity that can achieve this. So Luke chapter 17, if we look at verses 1 through 5, it says, "Then he said to the disciples, 'It is impossible that no offenses should come, but woe to him through whom they do come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and were thrown into the sea, that he should offend one of these little ones. Take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins against you, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you 7 times in a day and 7 times in a day returns to you saying, "I repent," you shall forgive him." We see this forgiveness over and over again. And then it's interesting what the apostles respond to this. In verse 5, it says, "And the apostle said to the Lord, 'Increase our faith.'" Increase our faith. They understood that they couldn't do this by themselves. There was a reliance on God. There's a reliance on His character and His attitude that we have to have. We are incapable of coming to this. We're incapable of extending forgiveness at this level. And he said, increase our faith. Help us. Surprise, surprise, right? We know we have flaws. Everything we do is because God has given us an opportunity. The fact that we understand the Sabbath, we're able to read the Bible and understand the truth, is because God has extended mercy. He has opened our eyes to help us work through what it is that He has in store for us. It has to be a reliance on God, and forgiveness is no different. Forgiveness is no different. Doesn't matter if it's a big or small offense. We struggle with it. We struggle because when we get hurt, that carnality comes out. That carnality comes out full force. And we do have to work at forgiveness. It's not as easy just saying, "I forgive you." We have to think day in and day out. We sin against God's law. We continue to slip up, and He continues to forgive us. And that's where He says, "I'm doing this to you. I expect you to do it to my other children. I expect you to do this to your brothers and sisters. I acknowledge your shortcomings." We have to acknowledge our shortcomings and ask for the help, because He set the example. Jesus Christ set the tone. Forgiveness is a godly characteristic that we have to obtain, which we have to emulate. That's where we need to get to. When we forgive, we reflect the Father's love. We reflect His mercy and the sacrifice that He made. We acknowledge it. We understand it. We extend it. We give it to others. That standard of forgive as He has forgiven you, that rings true every single day. Forgiveness gives us the opportunity to make an extension to our brothers and sisters of what God has extended to us. It's twofold. It really is, because we know we've received forgiveness, and therefore we have to extend it. Our purpose in life is to develop godly character. That's what we're working towards every single day. But we have to put our human nature, that pride. Pride is the antithesis of forgiveness. When we latch on to pride, we don't want to forgive. We don't want to ask for forgiveness. Pride creates some nasty things within us. It opposes and it resists the need to forgive people. We have to remember God first extended it to us. God extended it to us long before we ever had a chance to extend it to anybody else. We want justice. We want to get even. And that's why it's important for us to remember that God forgives us for those sins. God passes over those sins. He's not just done it in the past, but He's actively forgiving us constantly. Go over to Proverbs 19 real quick. Proverbs 19, verse 11, it's interesting to see what it can actually mean for us as humans. What it means to forgive. Proverbs 19, it's just one small verse. Verse 11, it says, "The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger." Now that's a good thing, right? If we take time, if we think about what we're doing, we're slow to anger. We have time to recover. That's why when somebody cuts me off, I don't have time to process. It's just instant rage. But it says discretion makes him slow to anger. And then it says, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. As human beings, there's glory in overlooking these transgressions, these problems. We're expected to address it, resolve it. And if possible, we forgive it and we move on. We recover that relationship where we build a new one. We're expected to forgive it, but that moving on process is sometimes difficult. If you go all the way back to Deuteronomy chapter 32 with me, I want to take a look at the Old Testament here. And then we'll flip back to the New Testament. But this shows us exactly, revenge isn't ours to take. We don't have the permission to do that. We're not expected to. We're not allowed to. That's why God tells us to forgive. Deuteronomy chapter 32, if you look at verses 34 and 35, it says, "Vengeance is mine and recompense. Their foot shall slip in due time, for the day of their calamity is at hand, and the things to come hasten upon them." Vengeance is mine. That's what God says. He doesn't say, go take vengeance for yourself. He says, it's mine. He says, in due time, it's coming. He's telling us, I am in full control. He says, I am in the lead. And he gets to determine what the outcomes are. We don't understand why people do things all the time. We're not mind readers. But God knows. God sees hearts, he sees minds, he sees where people have come from. He sees where people are going. He's the one that has that responsibility. He determines the outcome because he knows what's going to benefit everyone. He knows what has the greater good. Now, I said we'll go over to the New Testament. If you go back to Romans. Romans chapter 12, we have a section discussing brotherly love. Forgiveness is the forefront of brotherly love. But Romans chapter 12, it explains what we have to have. Who we're supposed to be. Romans chapter 12, if you look at verses 17, let's read 17 all the way through 21. It says, "Repay no evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in doing so, you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's not just that we forgive people and we ignore them from that point on. We turn our backs, we're cold to them. It says, help them. Give them all of these things that they need. You forgive them, and then you be as kind as you possibly can. He says that's actually got a bigger impact. And as humans, we understand that, right? We know what it's like to have something eat at us from the inside. Just chip away at us because we know that we've been wrong. We know that we've done something. And if we're stubborn enough, if we're prideful enough to try to resist that, it just eats at us because somebody's being so kind to us when we've done something wrong. And it takes us time to put aside us and realize that, okay, yeah, my human nature, that is vindictive. That's what it is, but that's not who I want to be. We can see forgiveness without maliciousness. Without maliciousness. And those who can do that, I have a lot of respect for. It takes a lot of patience, takes a lot of time to work through that. There's a lot of negative sides of being human. We have a lot of downfalls. But it's through God's character that He shows us how we're supposed to be, how we're supposed to act. We can desire revenge. We can desire retaliation and payback. It's because it's around us all the time. It's in every bit of entertainment that we see in our lives. That's what the world is based around. If we think about it, it's on the movie screens, right? Just about every movie that they come out with now has some type of plot that involves some of those things. It's in our music. It's on TV channels. I imagine most of us have done a lot of that in the past 3 months. We haven't had much else to do. I've seen a lot of things talking about people binge-watching Netflix shows. So we're just inundated with this. We see it in the social interactions too. We see it in the business life. Business leaders who are wronged, some point down the road, we see this retaliation act. They show, I was getting evil with this person. There's been enough documentaries that we see how that works. We see our politicians. So it's not just the fake things. It's not just our entertainment, but this, it's real life. Because it is humanity. It is who we are. It's not who we have to be. Because we work to change it. We work to be different. It surrounds us. And in spite of this evil, in spite of the confusion and the hatred, we can start to change. We can be a light. So we have a responsibility as often as possible. Any opportunity we have, we're expected to show forgiveness. Expected to give that love that God has shown us. And forgiveness is an act of faith. It is an act of faith because by forgiving someone, we're giving the ball to God. Right? No longer is it in our court. We trust that God's justice is better than what we can do on our own. That's what we read. That's what we read in Deuteronomy and Romans. He's the one that sets the tone. His justice is better than anything that we could ever do. He knows them better than we will ever know them. And we know that God's going to judge out of love and out of mercy and not out of spite. If it was left to us, it might be the other way around. But when we turn it over to God, when we let Him into our lives, when we forgive, and we say it's in God's hands, we leave behind trying to get even, we leave behind trying to recover whatever it was that we feel that we lost, something big happens. Something big happens. Now this doesn't mean that we're expected to stay in dangerous situations. We don't stay in a place where we're going to have harm placed upon us. Any type of dangerous scenario or some type of abusive relationship, that's not what God expects us to do. It doesn't mean we just stay there. We keep taking it. And we keep showing love. We're expected to remove ourselves from those positions. Kind of like we were quarantined as a show of love and respect to each other. We didn't want to infect anyone. we take these precautions. We use wisdom that God has given us, and we take measures. And this is the same example of that. We don't put ourselves into vulnerable positions that we know are likely going to end in a bad. You may have heard somebody use Matthew for this. Matthew chapter 5, if you go over there. Occasionally you do hear that, you know, we're not supposed to change what we do or how we do. We just keep forgiving. We just keep forgiving people. And they throw out Matthew 5 verse 39 to try to defend that this is how we act. That, okay, no matter what situation we're in, we deal with it. We move on. We try to make the best of it. But this scripture is heavily based on the legal side of things and taking legal action. But if we look at Matthew 5, look at verse 39. Actually, let's start in verse 38. Here's Jesus teaching about retaliation. So verses 38 and 39, he says, "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you not to resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also." And so I've heard this used to try to explain, okay, We put up with difficult situations at times. We put up with difficult people because it says we just turn the other cheek. And that's not what this means. Like I said, this is more, the tone of this is completely different. What this means, when it's talking about getting slapped on the cheek, it's a backhand. Whenever you got mouthy with your mom when you were little and she took that hand and came across the right side of your cheek, that's what this is referring to, this backhand. Even today in the East, it's still used as one of the greatest pieces of contempt. This contempt or extreme abuse. It's a sign. This sign of smacking someone with the back of your hand across their right cheek. So we still see that connotation today of this context of what it really means. It doesn't mean stay where you are. It's picturing this insult. This insult that of physical violence. Not that we put up with it, but there's some commentators that talk about this is actually religious persecution. This isn't us with our physical daily lives and the situations we're in, but actual religious persecution. And the things that we bear, and through Christ's example, we know that he put up with any type of religious persecution. And we're supposed to take that same frame of mind. In Matthew 26:67, you don't have to go over there, but the same verb is used for the ill treatment of Jesus as a blasphemer. As a blasphemer. So it's talking about this religious persecution. But it didn't matter what amount of ill treatment, what amount of harm that he received because of who he was and what he taught, he continued to. And there was no retaliation. There was no retaliation. There was no suing. I talked about this is talking about from a legal sense. There was a section in history where the Jews were good about suing each other for everything. So we have this explanation of don't take legal action. That's not what I wanted for you. And it fits perfectly with forgiveness. We're not suing each other if we're having an open heart and open mind. God and Jesus Christ want us loving. He wants us to love all people, even though when we love, we're vulnerable. When we love, we're exposed, right? That's why a lot of the biggest hurts in our lives come from our closest friends or our family. Because there's a vulnerability when we open ourselves up to those relationships. We're running a risk of deep, serious pain. But it's because we have a close relationship. It's because of that relationship and what it means. If we were just, hey, how you doing, friends? It'd be hard for them to hurt you, right? There's no closeness. There's no bond. But those people that you grew up with for most of your life, when they do something against you, it hurts. And it's hard to recover from that. It's hard to forgive because it's so deep. And it is possible for us to forgive. And without really going past and rebuilding those relationships, without that reconciliation part, we can forgive and we can repair our relationship with God and say, you know, I really have truly forgiven them. I've forgiven them for what they've done, but that's the extent of it. There's no restoring of that broken relationship. There's no restoring of those years that you spent together. But you can't have true forgiveness. And that's what God expects. He expects us to forgive. Reconciliation is a lengthy process. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes trust and respect to build back up. And sometimes it takes more of that stuff the second time around than it did the first time around. Because once our trust is broken, it's hard to repair that. And so this reconciliation part, it's very different from the forgiveness. It's a different idea. It's a different mindset. Because it's conditioned around our attitude. Our thought process. And it's conditioned around the other person, the offender's attitude and their character. Because if they're not acting like we should be hurt, you know, they offend us, they ask for forgiveness, we forgive them, but we're still hurt. We're still damaged. And they don't take the time to consider that we don't just jump right back into what we were doing. Then we realize it didn't connect. They didn't understand what it was that they did to us, the impact that they had on us. While its aim, speaking of forgiveness, while its aim is restoration of that broken relationship, it takes time. And those who commit the offenses have to recognize that it may take years to repair, to rebuild, that this is a process. This is something that takes energy. And it's not going to be like it was. But if they're genuinely repentant, from deep down in their heart, they recognize and accept the harm that they did, they'll take their time. They'll give us time to heal. They'll give us time to think about what happened, what needs to go take place from then on out. And it can be easy for us to say, I forgive you, but hang on to that mistrust. Hang on to that mindset that, all right, I can't forget about what they did. And that's part of being human. And sometimes we're harshest on ourselves. That's why it's hard to accept God's forgiveness. It's because we remember what we've done. Even though he says he's forgiven us, we haven't forgiven ourselves. So we have to be patient. We have to give time to rebuild that trust, restore those relationships, working through the different methods, different avenues of repairing that relationship. Even though God forgives our sins, he doesn't promise to remove all the consequences. And sometimes there's a heavy penalty for our actions. Sometimes we have to deal with it for life. If we make poor decisions and poor choices. And so he doesn't always protect us from the consequences of what we do. Yeah, being forgiven restores and this trust with God, but it's not the same level as with humans. Because there's an impact on us that we don't just forget. We can't just put it aside and it's gone. And words alone aren't always enough to get us to that point, to build that trust. When we've been significantly hurt, we sometimes resist it. We're hesitant. We're hesitant to get back in those same relationships that we had before because we don't want to experience that hurt and that pain again. Because it wasn't fun. None of us enjoy it. But we've all been on both sides of that, right? We have all been the offended and we have all been the offender. There's no getting around it. The lives that we live, we have been on both. Sometimes we cause the issues. And so we know how everybody feels. So it has to be cooperation. There has to be a cooperation on both sides of the fence. And through the years, it's easy for us to focus on one or the other, depending on where we're at in the situation, right? We always think, all right, I'm the offended. They need to fix what they've got. They're the ones that did this. They need to just do this. But then when we're on that other side, sometimes we're like, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. They need to toughen up. I didn't do anything that bad. It's easy for us to rationalize, right? We make excuses. We tell ourselves what we think we want to hear to make us feel better. And so we have to take into consideration both sides and remember what it feels like to be on that because we've both been there. We've both been on both sides of that fence. Doesn't matter how long you've lived. I've watched little kids take toys from other little kids. It happens from an early age. It's because we're human. It's because we're human. And sometimes we focus on what we want, what we think we need right at the moment. So we must bear in mind that our relationship with God, this repairing, this rebuilding, this forgiveness that He's extended to us and that He does with us, that's how we extend it. That's how we project it out to others. That's the help that we get. That's how we relate it all back, is understanding the sacrifice that He made, the offenses that we've made to God. They're huge compared to the little things that go on in our relationships. And sometimes there are some that are bigger than others. There are some that are more hurtful, more painful than others. And it may take more time. But God can impact us in an amazing way when we focus, when we recenter on Him and remember the sacrifice. In 1 John 4:11, John wrote, "Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." That's 1 John 4:11. "Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another." All throughout the epistle, John, he's talking about love and loving each other. I've got a Bible study series. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's 30-some times he talks about loving each other. And you just see this over and over and over again. We need love now more than ever. We lean it now more than ever. The world's not on a straight and narrow path. It's not straightforward. Situations arise, things happen. We rub each other the wrong way. We step on each other's toes. Not on purpose. But when we have a mindset, we're on a mission, we're doing something, and somebody else comes in to try to help, they're on a different mission. They have a different perspective. And it's easy to get our toes stepped on. We have to remember, all right, let's take a step back. Let's have communication. They don't even realize that they offended me. That happens more often than not. And then we're harboring these feelings, the agitation, a little bit of anger. It's not big things, so we're not like angry at people, but we're agitated. And it puts these rifts between us. We have to have the communication and this understanding that it is inevitable. We're gonna offend each other. It's how we react. It's how we move forward is the big thing that God expects. That's that godly character that comes out in us. We don't run from situations, but we learn to work through them. We learn to work through them because that actually makes us better, especially in conflicts. When you work through something with somebody when you're in conflict, you have a much stronger relationship coming out of that than you ever did going in. Communication is the key. When Paul refers to this ministry or service that we're doing, this expectation. If you go over to 2 Corinthians 5, why are we here on earth? Why is God working with a small group of people now? We're being used as representatives. We are representatives of the kingdom of God. And that means that our attitude, our character, how we carry ourselves is supposed to resemble that kingdom. And it's how Jesus Christ acted. Without reconciliation to God, we won't make any progress. We're stuck. We're stuck in these physical relationships. So look at 2 Corinthians chapter 5. If you look at verses 18 through 20, it says, "Now all things are of God who has reconciled us to Himself through Jesus Christ, and has given us the ministry of reconciliation, that is, that God was in Christ reconciling the world to Himself, not imputing their trespasses to them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation." And verse 20, "Now, then, when we are ambassadors for Christ, as though God were pleading through us, we implore you on Christ's behalf, be reconciled to God." We see this oneness, this unity. We see we are Christ's ambassadors. We have a hymn. Christ's ambassadors. We're supposed to be the representation, the example to show people that this can happen now. To show them that this reconciliation to humans and God alike, it can happen. In a world that's fueled by anger, fueled by hatred, we have to be the light. We get the opportunity to be a light. What happens when we can't? What happens when we don't? When we can't reconcile with our fellow man? What kind of light or example are we? What are we showing? If we're supposed to be the representatives of Jesus Christ, and we can't even get it together. We can't figure it out. What kind of trust does that build in them? That we're actually on the right track. That we have this figured out. At least we're moving in the right direction. We may not have it fully figured out, but we're trying hard. Think of that impact that we have. Whether good or bad. If we do it right, it's a huge good impact. If we do it wrong, that's a huge negative impact. So we have to struggle. We have to work through these things. We have to do our best to be that positive impact. That positive light. I want to jump back in now and finish the story that I began with Mary Johnson and O'Shea Israel. Because where I stopped, it wasn't the conclusion of their story. That anger and that hatred, that rage that she had, that emptiness of not being fully fulfilled. She had physical justice. But there was still anger inside of her. It didn't end there. As much as she was consumed at that point, she didn't stop. There's a curiosity, and there was something more that she needed to do. She couldn't find the help on her own. No groups, no amount of discussion groups helped her through this thing. So about 12 years into O'Shea's sentence, he spends 12 years in jail. Mary actually made a request to go visit him. She wanted to go see him. She was curious. She was curious to see what his mindset was. You know, he was a 16-year-old young man, a boy, when he sat in that courtroom. She saw his attitude and his character of, I don't know what it was at that time, but I'm sure she just took it as anger. He didn't care what he did. That may have been the anger and the rage inside of her, but she saw this kid that she remembered, and so she was curious of what it was. She wanted to know, who he'd become. What changed in those years? And initially he said no. He denied the request. I don't blame him. If I killed somebody, I wouldn't want to sit there across from their mother or their father or brother. That hurts. Bringing those things back, that would be painful. And so he requested it. So a few months went by and she ended up making another request. She reached out again. And so this time, this caught the attention of the Minnesota Department of Corrections. They saw this request come through a second time, and they're going, okay, hang on, this isn't normal. We don't normally see this because this isn't a normal reaction. Usually there's anger, and it's not a good thing to bring people like that together. And so they flagged it, and they talked to her. They sat her down. They said, okay, why are you wanting to meet? So she goes through. She's just trying to understand who he is becoming. What happened to him in these last 12 years? Is he the same person? Because when she left, she was glad. Because she thought he was an animal that was in a cage, that needed to be in a cage, because he couldn't be trusted outside of that. And so they talk, and what the corrections facility did, they said, you know, let's start slow. How about you go into a women's facility? You meet some of the inmates there. Let's take these little steps before you actually sit down with O'Shea. So that's what they did. They set up this meeting to meet with some of the female inmates at one of the correction facilities. And through this process, through that time of sitting down with these female inmates, and I don't know what they did, I don't know what their crimes were, but she said, as she sat there and built these relationships with these women, that's when her heart began to change. For Mary Johnson, it took sitting down and talking and having these discussions before she actually started to have a change of heart. And she began to see these women as people again. Not as animals. Not as something that needed to be caged, but she saw them as people. So she worked through these steps, through this process, and finally the day came. The day came and she got a chance to actually sit down. They finally met. Mary Johnson, O'Shea Israel, met for the first time since the meeting in the courtroom. And she immediately noticed after 12 years of incarceration, he wasn't the same person. He had changed mentally. He changed physically. A lot happens in 12 years. And she recognized that straight off the bat. And so through this encounter, they shared stories. They talked about their lives, where they came from, their different backgrounds, what they grew up. Just different things. Just getting to know each other. They spent this time getting to know each other. And at the end of this first meeting, at the end of this first conversation of opening each other's hearts, actually getting to know each other, Mary told Israel, she says, "I forgive you from the bottom of my heart. I forgive you from the bottom of my heart." And Israel responded incredulously. And he says, "Ma'am, how do you do that?" We see both sides of the fence here. Even if we do become the offender, sometimes we can't understand how they can forgive us for something. But Mary, after all the hate, after all the rage, after receiving justice through the system, it was viewing O'Shea in a different light, that he was a human, and that we make mistakes. And it was through this first encounter that she was able to actually have some sort of repair. She could start rebuilding something that she lost. She lost a piece of her. She lost a piece of herself. And when he asked, when he responded to that question, she broke down. She lost control of her emotions. I couldn't imagine what was going on, the tension in that room of when they first walked in and having these discussions. But she lost control of all of her emotions. She broke down in tears. Now she's crying. She's becoming unsteady on her feet. And right before she falls, O'Shea reaches out and grabs her and pulls her in and holds her close and hugs her. He hugs her just like he would hug his own mother. This is a woman whose son he had just killed 12 years earlier. That he shot dead. We see this forgiveness. We see this beginning of this reconciliation. Because it doesn't end there. That was still just the beginning. That's just the beginning for their relationship. Mary said all that junk deep down inside her was loosed. She could let it go. There was a freedom that she had. And she felt like the person she used to be. It's because she took the time to view him in a different light, to give him an opportunity for forgiveness. She could have hung on to that the rest of her life. She could have been angry. She would have never been the same person. She would have never gotten back to who she was. But she was willing to open up her heart. She was willing to open up her mind to take a different point of view, to look at it from a different perspective, to put in the effort to get to know him a little bit better. In 2010, O'Shea was released from jail. He was released from prison. So from that, before that, but from their first point in time to 2010, they had frequent visits. They continued to meet, continued to grow. And when he was released in 2010, he moved right next door to Mary. They lived side by side. She treats him as if he was her own son. He treats her as if she was his mother. And they continue to work through this relationship. They're constantly checking on each other, seeing how each other are doing. And at one point, if I can find the actual quote, Mary said, no matter the deep pain, deep hurt, she gets to watch the experiences that her son never got through O'Shea. She views him as that son. And she said, if he ever falls out of touch, you know, it's easy for us to do, right? We don't always call our moms or our dads as much as we should. And she says, if he never falls out of touch, if he falls out for a couple of days, I'm quick to let him know. I'm quick to call him out. I'll say, "Boy, how come you ain't called over here to check on me? You ain't even asked if I need my garbage to go out." That's something I could hear my mom saying. "Go take the garbage out. What are you doing?" So they have this relationship that I couldn't have even imagined when I first started reading the story and seeing where this came from. The amount of forgiveness that it takes to have a relationship like this. the forgiveness and the reconciliation that they found in this experience. Sometimes it takes us a lifetime to learn that. It takes us a lifetime to understand what that means. Because we can repair, we can rebuild. In this case, even build a completely new relationship out of the situations that we deal with. If we let God in our lives. If we let God into our hearts, we have to let God lead us to change our hearts. To change who we are. We've all been on the receiving end of forgiveness. God the Father and Jesus Christ made sure that. Because of our relationship with Him, I know without a doubt we've all received forgiveness. And there's an expectation that we carry that forward. That we are the example. We're the light. It's our turn to be ambassadors of Christ.